right, it is episode 468 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I know what we need to do. We need to get a clone of Bronze Thumb.
That's a great idea. Look into that. Because, yes, we are once again Bronze Thumb-less, I guess you could say. And certainly part of that is because it is convention season, and if we ever get to catch up with him again, he will have plenty of stories from what I understand. Maybe we need to send out the Guardians of the Galaxy. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. All right, we are going to be talking about some of the stragglers from the last couple of weeks that we have not been able to catch up on. And I shouldn't say that with too much, shall we say, bad feeling, because some of these shows are actually pretty good. So it's just a very interesting and eclectic combination. But before I go any further than that, Edmund, you know what to
Absolutely. We do like to talk about just about anything that might have happened on these episodes. We do have to warn you that you will be spoiled. But especially in some of these cases, we've let them steep and simmer for a little bit. So we certainly hope you've had a chance to catch them.
That's right. And let's go ahead then. And Edmund, why don't you go ahead and tell me what you want to talk about first.
I think we need to talk about the final episodes of Orphan Black.
All right, and yep, two episodes here. Let's run the first promo.
What's up with your garage?
Oil change.
There are only two episodes left.
Do I look like I'm trying to be funny?
The disease is spreading too rapidly.
But if we can reboot her immune system...
With my kid's bone marrow.
Leave her alone, Mark.
You're not locking Gracie up anymore.
Will Estikusima die?
She might.
Orphan Black, all new, Saturday at 9, only on BBC America.
All right, and to recap, please.
Certainly. This is Orphan Black, Season 2, Episode 9, Things Which Have Never Yet Been Done. Cosima takes a turn for the worse, which forces Sarah to take desperate measures that result in tragic consequences for those she loves. Meanwhile, the Proletheans set their ultimate plan in motion, and Allison and Donnie tangle with the law.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's see. I do believe that Henry gave this one a 9. What would you give this?
I will also give it a 9.
Okay. And I will give it an 8.5, which is really, I was between that and a 9 myself, but there we go. All right, well, let's see. Maybe just sum up your thoughts on this one, or give me your highlight at any rate.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of just main highlight was having the Clone Club dance party. But
yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And even though I do feel that this was them perhaps stretching that technology to about its limit, if not a little bit past it, but having all four clones together in Felix's loft and just getting to all dance around, and they did take advantage of the fact that they did seem to be kind of dancing in their own world, so they weren't having to directly interact too much, which helped. But it was still a very fun thing to see, I mean, with this episode. There was also that sense of as all that was happening, especially knowing it's the next to last episode, that this was just sort of the calm before the final nastiness happens, and of course with Helena getting nabbed, and turns that things took, it certainly turned out to be the case, aside from that, I think the other big highlight for me was, as I say, Allison and Donnie tangling with the law, and for as hapless as he has been, and the way they've almost played him with over the top in terms of being the comic relief. I mean, Allison has tended to play that role anyway, and then Donnie has just been so clueless, and then his whole the accidental shooting of Leakey to have him finally stand up and be counted and have that showdown with Vic and the cop in the van was just really really fun to see, and also a nice bit of character development to see him finally come around and see the two of them really finally form something that feels like more of a real bond rather than all of the suspicion and deception that's been going on. So that was it was nice to see that happening, particularly in that particular part of the story.
Well, why don't we go ahead then and move on to? I know that this was pretty much in many ways the end of, or at least the setup for the end of, I guess you could say almost the first act of the show, because the two seasons, the first and the second, really kind of brought a lot of things to light in terms of just what is going on with Sarah and her various sisters, so to speak. And the finale had to deal with Sarah turning herself in, and then also what was happening to Helena.
Now one thing is, because we've taken a while to get to these, couldn't quite remember. Was it before episode 9 or was it in episode 9 that that Kira gets taken?
Oh, I believe that it was actually in.
It was
in 9, right? Because she had to go and get Kira.
Yeah.
So, well, let's go ahead and run the promo for the finale.
I left her with you for 5 bloody minutes, and she's gone now.
The season finale of Orphan Black.
Who are you?
Kira's father.
You used me.
None of this is personal.
If you let her die without me, it is personal.
My name is Sarah Manning. And this is my unconditional surrender.
The season finale of Orphan Black, Saturday at 9, only on BBC America.
All right, and that would be Season 2, Episode 10, By Means Which Have Never Yet Been Tried. Season 2 ends with Sarah being forced to concede when Rachel launches her latest ploy. However, the Clone Club springs into action to save her. Later, Sarah meets a new ally and uncovers a terrifying new dimension to the conspiracy. That's one way of putting it. Henry gave this one a 7. What would you give it?
Yeah, I don't think I would go quite that low, but I think I will go an 8. I was toying with a 7.5, but I will go an 8.
Yeah, I went with an 8 myself, which this one we can talk about, how things went with Sarah, that she finally got her her revenge against Rachel, and that whole thing came to a close, and it basically, like I said, the struggle in order to understand or at least come to terms with what was going on with Dyad and everything else and those clones and what their travails were, it all came together very nicely, and then we get that twist at the end, which is hiding in plain sight has been the male counterpart to the female clones, which if I were coming onto this show and had to think of, oh, hey, you know what? Here's Tatiana Maslany and the just incredible way that she has managed to portray all these different characters with different personality traits and so many nuances to these characters and do it in such a way that you actually forget that it's her half the time. Oh, yeah, you're going to have to come onto the show and do at least half as good a job. Good luck. I don't know too many guys who would take that on other than, if they were given the promise, and you're going to be able to kind of roll around in bed with Tatiana at some point. No, we'll just leave that to Dario. That twist is very interesting because, quite frankly, I guess that was the logical place for them to go. I don't know. What do you think?
It is the thing that I think to a certain extent did bring down my rating, because it to some extent seemed to be coming out of left field, even though it makes sense in terms of the thinking about the implications of this project and the fact that it never quite got off the ground the way they wanted it to, and there would be another program running, or another program that was created in the wake of all that, actually kind of similar to the Machine versus Samaritan on Person of Interest, now that I think about it. But I was really feeling like, especially with coming out of that previous episode of where there was very much the focus on this the sort of family of clones that that Tatiana Maslany has created, and then going into this whole new dimension and new complications with more intrigue and more mystery, and it felt like them just thinking that, you know, no, we don't have enough here, which I think they do, and we need to make it even deeper and more conspiratorial, and I was feeling like they didn't really need to go there, and we'll have to see in terms of the execution into next season, fingers crossed. But certainly, I think in terms of the acting challenge, I mean, one thing that I kind of presume, I mean, just in the way he's been portrayed so far, is that especially since this is the military option, I'm presuming the male clone is going to be a case where they are much more homogenous and similar from clone to clone. Also because they don't want to tempt fate and try and have somebody, as you say, try and go up against Tatiana's multiple personalities and just come up wanting. But that was still the part that got to me as it went along, and then as we got to the final revelations at the end, especially after they'd had this whole wonderful banding together, this sort of a MacGyver moment of figuring out the way that Sarah could get one up on Rachel and get away, aside from the fact we're going to have Rachel with an eye patch next season, which is a lot of fun. Unless Dyad's got amazing eyeball regeneration technology too.
Why not?
Yeah. But you see what I'm saying? We was really emphasizing the whole sort of communal clone club that we've gotten used to, and not that a show doesn't need to expand and try and bring in new elements, but it just felt like they were really stretching for a new shocking thing for the end of this season, and I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that it does work out.
Yeah, I guess basically Henry's concerns can be really summarized in one way, which is, has the show kind of run its course? Because I feel that there are some people that would probably agree that even this season was pushing the concept almost to its limit. And, you know, the question is that by introducing this new set of clones and expanding it out even further, I don't know. So I remain hopeful. They have been renewed for a third season, by the way.
Okay.
So that's wrapped up. But I can understand why people who came out of the first season so incredibly impressed and happy with the show, being a little bit off put by the second season and it feeling just a little bit less, a little more chaotic, not quite as ordered and staged as directly as the first season was, and being very uncertain as to where things are going to go, but not in a, oh boy, I wonder what they're going to do next, but so much as the, like, how are they going to do this next? Even that said, clearly the season came in, you know, 8.2, 8.3, around there, so it still did incredibly well. But yeah, I can definitely understand how this finale was a little bit of a drop-off, because it left you feeling very uncertain as to where the show could go or would go next.
Yeah, because it wasn't even a matter of in terms of the lead up to it, I wasn't having that much of a problem with, in terms of some of the machinations within Dyad and Leaky getting killed and Michelle Forbes' character being introduced. that felt to me like a good natural progression of making things a little twistier and a little more intricate. And then it just seemed like it was in the finale. It almost feels like even if they were going to, they had this in mind to hold back on it and introduce it next at the beginning of next season, rather than trying to drop it in as this big twisty revelation at the end of this season, because I really don't think they needed it.
Hmm. Well, we will find out. As I said, it has in fact been renewed for a third season, so let's see how that goes. Now, let's go ahead then and pick our next topic, and what would you like to cover next?
Well, let's go to something that really has no problems being over the top at all, which is Crossbones.
All right, and here's, again, we have a couple episodes to cover. Here's the first promo.
I know you think highly of her. She thinks highly of you, too.
On the next Crossbones.
The English. They've got her.
Where does Teach hide himself away?
Will Blackbeard rescue her?
Kate will betray the truth because he'll leave no alternative.
Or let her secrets...
He's lying.
He's going to die at the hands of Commodore.
Be buried forever.
You don't trust me?
Crossbones. All new. Fridays 10, 9 central on NBC.
And now, please, Edmund, if you could give the recap for this episode, and do not force me to do something that you do not want me to do.
I'd be happy to, Commodore. This is Crossbones, Season 1, Episode 3, The Man Who Killed Blackbeard. Kate is captured on a trading voyage, prompting Blackbeard and Lo to join forces to rescue her. Before long, Lo discovers that Blackbeard has a hidden motive.
Yes, and it's to enunciate in a particular way, in a very strange accent that I'm still getting used to, even though I really enjoyed the show. All right, so what would you give this episode, do you think?
I will give this episode a 8.
Okay. And I would give it a 7.5. Although I will admit I was between a 7.5 and an 8. So it was definitely a kind of in-between type of episode for me. Now, this one, it's been a few weeks since it ran. So this, I really enjoyed just about everything that happened with Kate and this mission and how it things were going a bit wrong. The only thing that I was kind of off put a little bit by was, again, just I like it, but I am starting to feel like Malkovich is occasionally chewing that scenery just a little bit too much, but yet it still feels right. I don't know, it's very entertaining to watch.
Yes, it is. But yeah, I mean, for me, it was I was similarly between the two scores. But what pushed it over the top for me was really that whole final rescue sequence. Kate buried alive, and Blackbeard and Lo. Whereas really, it was really more Blackbeard's plan. But the way they distracted Jagger and got him out of the way so they could circle around and take on the remaining guards and get her out, and it's swashbuckling pirate stuff. So it's I'm perfectly happy with the that, yes, our two main characters, I was going to say, I don't know if you can call them heroes, but certainly our main characters being the being able to just take the guys out and rescue her. But I thought that whole sequence was just a very nice bit of swashbuckling and daring do, and I've been talking about shows that are good summer series where they just need to be entertaining and at least keep enough consistency so that you're not your brain doesn't completely explode, and I've been finding Crossbones to be doing a good job of keeping that up at the moment.
Hmm. Yeah, this also, as I recall, is the episode where they really started to delve into, was it Jagger? Is that the guy who, I think you mentioned that was his name. Yeah, Julian Sands' character. And if there's anybody that is chewing the scenery more than Malkovich is, it's Julian Sands. But I think that's just by habit at this point. And that maybe took a little bit of the shine off, too. The scenes where he was kind of throwing that exposition out about his motivations was a little clunky. And it took a little bit away from what I thought was a really harrowing and daring type of episode, as far as from Kate's perspective. I mean, it's not too many shows that you see, especially in the summer, where they're burying people alive. That was a little surprising. Although this is the network that is running Hannibal. And yes, frankly, what's going to happen if they take a chance? It can't be any worse than what the last several years have been for NBC. And if anything, they're looking at Fox and going, at least we're not you anymore. I kind of appreciate the fact that they are taking as many chances as they can with the restrictions that they have. That being said, let's go ahead then and move on to the second episode. And here is the promo for that one.
Blackbeard is emerging from his long sleep.
I want you to help me rob someone.
You can't lie to me, not to me.
He knows.
If he knew, he'd be already dead.
If you allow this indulgence, I'll skin you alive and eat your gizzard.
Crossbones, all new Friday after Dateline on NBC.
All right, and recap, please.
Season 1, Episode 4, Antoinette. Lowe tries to report back to Spymaster William Jagger, Julian's aunt, after discovering Blackbeard's scheme, but Lowe soon learns Jagger may be more sinister than even Blackbeard.
Mwahaha! Indeed. All right, and what would you give this one?
I will give this a 7.5.
All right, yep, and I'm aligned very much with that. All right, so general impressions, highlights.
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, we were catching glimpses of it in some of his tactics in the previous episode, but getting a taste of just how nasty and treacherous Jagger could be. I mean, it was interesting that they were doing this of Blackbeard saying, you know, oh, you know, no, if he gets his hands on her, she'll talk. And when you're setting stuff up like that, to actually get to the scenes and actually follow through on it, and he is going to extremes. So I mean, as you were just saying about the previous episode, it is rather surprising to have them having stuff that's this raw and sort of on the edge is surprising for a network and for a summer show, but it is certainly keeping the tension ramped up.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And one of the things is that I do feel like a little bit they are moving perhaps too quickly through some of the relationship stuff that's going on here, because while the inexplicable gaps in the airing schedule have contributed to it feeling like it's been on the air much longer than it has in terms of total material. I mean, we're only talking about four episodes, but in those four episodes, we've had Kate basically start an affair with Lowe.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, she's, you know, Lowe is trying to help her husband kind of get out of his addictions and back, not perhaps on his feet, but at least in better shape, as he's, you know, as he's supposed to be trying to recreate this device, the MacGuffin that's behind the entire series. And yeah, it's just like, wow. So they're already playing on the tensions and jealousies that this is kind of dredging up when literally it's the fourth episode. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they've really established it well enough. And that kind of took a little bit off for me that yes, I like the fact that Jagger is now clearly being shown to be at least as amoral as Blackbeard is, which is the kind of tension that you want between your apparent antagonist and protagonist. And it really puts Lowe in this interesting position. And it actually really explains perhaps better why his sympathy for Blackbeard is more understandable and mm-hmm. amenable, because otherwise it would be like, well, why is this guy so, so close to someone who is so villainous? And really you get to see that, well, he's choosing between two evils. And is it the one that is really doing all this bad stuff in order to maintain what is essentially the most free republic at the time? However questionable its origins, or is he trying to maintain the status quo that is, doing essentially the same stuff, but pretending to be righteous. I could see Lo being more sympathetic to Blackbeard in that situation and him making that move, but not this fast. I don't know if it's because there's just not that many episodes and they have to really move through the story. It almost makes me wonder if this is why it was relegated to the summer, not just because it's a pirate show in the tropics and, you know, nice to think of heat the summer, you know, it kind of makes you think in that mood, but maybe just the fact that there were some storytelling flaws ultimately that were perhaps holding it back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly you're right. I mean, the stuff with Kate and Lo, where they're together, then they're like, "Oh no, we can't. He's my husband's too good. Basically, we can't do this." But at the same time, and there's also been this little thread of Blackbeard's consort and the lieutenant and the two of them getting together and then being all worried about oh he knows, but he doesn't seem to be acting on it, or maybe he's acting on it, and that seems to be intended to set up some doubt about whether Blackbeard's loyalties or some you know, adding some villainous nature that doesn't really seem to be working too well for me, especially now that they are bringing Jagger more to the fore as yes, he may be the putative good guy, but they are certainly setting him up to be the sort of character where you're more than happy to betray him and throw your lot in with the scalawag pirate who may in fact be more noble, just like Errol Flynn just about always was. I can definitely see that being a possibility, that there are certain aspects that they did decently well, but then in other ways it doesn't completely hang together. But at the same time, it is I am finding it very entertaining, because it is a fabulous cast, even if some of them are chewing the scenery to a huge extent. But certainly in terms of the main characters, it's some quality people having a really fun, if over the top, go at it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think we're going to go ahead and take our mid-show break, and when we come back, we are going to wrap things up for this week, so stay tuned. All right, and let's see, where shall we? I guess we should go ahead and tackle our other main topic for this week, and that would be The Leftovers. And let's go ahead and run the promo.
How to start for you, Dad?
That depends on what you mean by it.
You steal my bagel this morning?
Did I what? There's a gun in her purse.
Why are we following her?
Because she's dangerous.
She's a really bad influence on you, man.
You here on your own free will? She snuck off in the middle of the night so she could be with them!
This girl is everything.
Where is he?
I don't know.
Mr. Harvey, I need you to come with me.
All right, and that would be The Leftovers, Season 1, Episode 2, Penguin 1, Us 0. Okay. Kevin sees a therapist after a series of unsettling encounters. Meg makes a crucial decision about her future. Tom and Christine find themselves in a dicey situation. Jill and Amy take an interest in Carrie Coon's comings and goings. All right, and Edmund, what would you give this episode, do you think?
I will give this, a 7.5.
Okay, I'm going to stick with an 8. Which means that we basically liked it about as much as the pilot. So there you go. Not a bad continuation, I suppose. But we have a few different things going on here. First of all, there's this bit with the therapist, which I believe is where the reference to the penguin comes from. This is going to be the kind of show where you scratch your head about the episode titles, isn't it?
Yes.
Because it's like, are we in... Oh, the competition with penguins? Some kind of weird hockey game? Anyway. So Kevin, at the crux of this particular story, and I'll be honest, right up until the end, I really wasn't sure if he was having hallucinations or not. they did a really nice job with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that it was, and wasn't until the end when apparently the daughter and her friend does see the man with the pickup. I was having the same thoughts of, you know, whether they'd just done a really good job of setting us up to think that this guy's there. But then I was starting to have to think back, and it's like, okay, well, nobody in the bar really reacted to him. Nobody, he was just alone on the street shooting dogs, as you know, which is basically what got him into the therapy session. They did set that up rather nicely, and presumably it's you know, it is decided now. But who knows? Perhaps they could even wiggle out of that one, but I don't think so.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they pretty much solidified it, at least in terms of this guy who's shooting dogs, when Jill interacted with him and asked who he was. So it was like, okay, well, there's at least someone there. Yeah. Now the question is it who he's thinking it is? although I did enjoy him walking up to the mayor and basically saying, so did you steal my bagel this morning? And it's like, what? Because I'm sitting there thinking to myself, did she even have an opportunity? what is he thinking? Although I, you know, and who hasn't wanted to take one of those stupid toasters and smash the living crap out of it? Anyway,
even though it did determine that no, he wasn't crazy about that either.
Yeah, exactly. But it is interesting then that what I'm assuming is that, of course, the reason that he's concerned about this, or that everybody is concerned about it, is that his father has this dementia that's going on as well, perhaps some kind of schizophrenia type of situation. But what is interesting is that I'm not entirely sure that the dad is insane either. Mm-hmm. And if there's a little bit of a Lost-esque mystery going on here, that was probably the one piece that was in the puzzle in this episode. Because it's like, is the dad just crazy, or is there more going on? And that really left me with a bit of a pause.
Yeah, certainly. And as it went along, and then that final sequence when he's talking to someone who isn't there, that someone does seem to be giving a message. Yeah, I like that. It was kind of the converse to where we were wondering about Kevin, and then got the confirmation at the end, and then with his dad, where you're not really seeing where he doesn't seem that crazy, and then he does, but then it's, oh, but wait a minute, maybe there was something more there. I did enjoy the way they played that out, and of course, having Scott Glenn playing the dad, I mean, he really nailed that that ambiguity, I thought. And also, I just have to mention with the mayor, I did like HBO giving themselves that little shout out with her walking in, seeing the conspiracy wall, and going, I never should have told you to watch The Wire.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Let's see. I just want to move on then to Meg, or let's go ahead to the next piece here. It says Meg makes a crucial decision about her future. Yeah, kind of. I guess you could interpret it that way. What I found more interesting about that side of it is that we finally got a little bit more insight into what's going on with the guilty remnant, which, yes, I believe this is the first time that they're actually really given much definition at all. And even so, they're still a bit odd. They claim not to be a cult, and yet, they employ many of the same tactics as a cult. But then it just makes me wonder, yes, but what really are they trying to achieve? Because we don't really see that negative side of it, which is what you usually expect about a cult. What are your thoughts on the guilty remnant?
Yeah, I like the way they're parsing it out and just giving us little bits and pieces each time. It's an interesting ambiguity certainly in terms of the giving up your belongings and sort of inculcating someone into the culture, that there's all those elements, but then the way that they don't come on strong and make you do it all at once, and that apparently you can be there for weeks or months just deciding and slowly integrating was a very interesting little twist. And certainly does a good job of making them seem not quite as threatening as they would be if it was just the full court press that you normally expect in that situation.
Well, it's a nice contrast to this other thing with Tom and Christine and this cult leader that hugs people into feeling better, which is really disturbing in so many different ways. But you look at the way that law enforcement deals with that actual cult, and that has so many of the elements of an actual, you know, religious cult that is clearly got these malevolent overtones to it. I'm still not sure exactly what's going on there, because I have a feeling that it is some kind of faux mysticism, that it's really somebody preying on the needs of people to feel redeemed and feel better about what's going on with this whole post-disappearance or post-departure type of world. But you contrast that to the guilty remnant, and it's almost like the really harmful cult is the one that is externally relieving people of their quote-unquote sin, where the guilty remnant, by its own name, is essentially giving themselves over to the impossibility of redemption. So it's this interesting compare-contrast in how they're treated.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I did notice was that the way each of them is being presented with the guilty remnant, it's the classic way we're getting shown it, not told it. And with the others, the fact that they wound up giving us all this background, or at least all of this public background, through the standard law enforcement briefing, given what they were setting up to do, I mean, it made sense that yes, they'd be going over all of this background, but it wound up leaving me wondering a bit of, okay, so we're getting the official line, and certainly as sort of go. creepy as it all appears on the surface, whether this is getting set up for to be perhaps not something a little bit different down the line, and they're just trying to build up all these expectations of this strange guy who says he can just hug your herd away and has a taste for young Asian girls, and which just which just makes him seem even seedier. But then again, at the same time, saying there is something special about this one, whether that'll all just turn out to be in his head, or as we were saying with Scott Glenn's character, but maybe there is something there in what he's saying, and he's just being built up as more villainous than it's actually going to turn out to be.
Let's see here. So then we have this final odd little tangent where Jill and Amy take an interest in Carrie Coon's comings and goings. Lots of little things going on here. I mean, this very uncomfortable scene where Carrie turns out to be an insurance agent, and you get to see this incredibly practical, real world thing take place where just getting insurance money for having a loved one disappear and having to jump through these hoops, and it's like, yep, that's exactly what would happen. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, it's like, well, why does she carry a gun around? Well, if you had that job, wouldn't you want to protect yourself from the inevitable crazy person who's going to attack you for asking these really awful questions? I want to kind of back up a little bit because, we have this character of Amy, and I'm still not quite sure what role she plays in this whole dysfunctional family relationship. Because obviously she's the quote unquote bad influence on Jill. Not that Jill needs a whole lot of help. But it was that dream sequence with Kevin where I really thought they were going to go a lot darker and more disturbing and have her make a move on the dad. And the fact that it was a dream didn't necessarily make it any better. I had to keep reminding myself, no, it's okay. She's really not a teenager in real life. as much as she plays this way too worldly teenager on the show. But they did a really nice job of casting because she's got that allure, but she's also just a little unsettling. And it's quite frankly part of the way that she plays it. It calls back to what came to mind was, if you watched the first two seasons of Skins and Hannah Murray's character. There's a lot of undertones of that in her performance as well. She kind of physically looks a little bit like Hannah Murray, but also just the kind of off-putting personality that that came with it. And it's just there's resonance of that between the characters, and I'm sure that I'm kind of pulling that memory into how I'm perceiving this character, but I feel like there's something about her character because of the way that she has insinuated herself into that family that maybe not consciously or directly sinister, but she is a catalyst of many things going on in the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And, but I mean, whether she, it's directly involving her, or she's just the way she was showing up in the dream sequence is just the reminder of it. One of the biggest mysteries right now is how this family has imploded as a result of this, except none of them were actually one of the disappeared. I think there is a lot of family past and family secrets that have yet to come out that with Amy that's just providing part of the catalyst or reminders for it, but we at this point we still don't really know why his wife went into the guilty remnant, why his son ran away, certainly in terms of all that going on, it's understandable why the daughter would start acting out and hanging out with wrong people and that sort of thing, but on top of the more worldwide mysteries that have been introduced, I think one of the really central ones it is this question of exactly why is this family in the state it's in? Because in terms of what's happened to them, it's been it's far less, they have lost on the surface far less than a lot of the families around them. So, you know, yeah, I like the way they've set this up to give us, it's a bunch of different mysteries and things for us to try and figure out. And at the same time, just continuing the sort of portrait of the small town after this happened and how everyone's reacting to it. So, yeah, I mean, we're just two episodes in, but I'm enjoying, well, enjoying is perhaps the wrong word, as Gary was saying an episode or two ago. But they are keeping me nice and intrigued and interested in what's going on.
Yeah, it's funny that you say, like, well, why is this family at the center of all this when they never had any direct effect as a result of all of this? And that's a good point, because I don't know why, but I had made a connection between the opening sequence where the woman loses her baby and the wife, but in retrospect, they're not the same, obviously. No. So it's like, well, okay, then I don't get it. Why? What is going on here? Is it just the pressure of society? But part of it also is that you've got this guilty remnant that also, I get the sense, is observing the people, and when they see these tensions rise and survivor's guilt rise up in people, that's when they start stalking them. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, I don't know, there's still quite a bit to reveal in order to explain why people are reacting the way that they are. And I don't know, like, for instance, Meg and her motivations, like, what exactly is it? I guess her mother disappearing was what they were talking about in this episode, but I still feel like there's more to that too that needs to be explained. I guess part of it is that I don't know that this is really the fault of the show so much as it is the source material, is that I feel like they really need to focus in on what exactly is this whole deal with the guilty remnant. It feels very forced, because I don't get the sense of why they do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just presented that this is the way that they are. And that was fine in the pilot, but then it was like, okay, well, then you're going to follow up on that, right? And they kind of do and they kind of don't. I was expecting just a little more clarity out of this episode, and I guess I didn't really get it. And
yeah, that's part of the problem when your cult-like group, their whole thing is they don't speak. So
yes.
Yeah. A lot must be inferred, at least for now.
Right. But you'd expect at least somebody to say something, like there be someone who has, I guess, been there and left. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. All right, well, that means that we have covered most of our major topics, and we can move into some... So did you catch this one?
I did, and I think I would give this a 6.
Okay, I'm sticking with a 5.5.
Okay.
I can't say that there's necessarily a lot that's wrong with this show right now. It's just not engaging me.
Yeah.
I feel like I just can't get my head around exactly what this show is supposed to be about. And I guess I need to give it a little bit more time, because there's some interesting stuff going on here. But it's definitely not doing a whole lot to inspire me. Let's put it that way. If this was not running in the summer when there's not a whole lot else going on, I don't know that I would even bother keeping up with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reaching that point where they did premiere it in this little lull period, and so far I'm with you where it's not really grabbing me. It's not the sort of topic that is really up my alley in the first place, and some of the stuff with the angels with the bulletproof wings and that sort of thing, I just find I'm finding a little silly at this point. And it's the sort of thing where I mean, if they were going really over the top with some of the sort of, you know, the Vegas Roman elements, which they already are to a certain extent, you know, except there's that problem of like, no, but except, you know, here's one of the problems where, you know, the two main guys in Vegas whose character names I don't recall, so just Anthony Head and Alan Dale, where they're too serious.
It's like they're in a completely different show. But it's part of it too is the production values. There were these angelic warriors, I guess, in their armor is so clearly just foam rubber.
Right.
It's like, I've seen cosplay that looks better than this guy's. Come on. They're trying, but I don't think they even know what kind of show they're making at this point. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's rapidly becoming the kind of show that just inspires one to just drop it. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Under the Dome, season 2, episode 2, Infestation, or as I like to call it, giving me more and more reasons to just drop it.
You're on your own with this one.
So. Yeah. Barbie risks his life to help Rebecca save the Chester's MILF. Okay, whatever. I'm not even going to continue because I was giving this show a second chance because I wanted to see if it could kind of find itself again, and it's just no. It's not really doing much for me, and I'm just going to say we're not going to continue to try to take it seriously. It's not doing anything for us. Now, here's a new show, and Edmund, it's not going to help if you didn't see this one or not, but...
I did.
Okay. Good. This is the much ballyhooed and promoted Extant, Season 1, Episode 1, Re-entry. Astronaut Molly Woods tries to reconnect with her family after returning from a 13-month solo mission in space. In the opener, Molly is shocked to learn she is pregnant, and she recalls a mystifying encounter with another person on the space station. Oh, that leaves out so much. So what would you give this, do you think?
I would give this a 6.
Okay. Yeah, the ever default for a pilot episode. I'll say this, Halle Berry is not the biggest problem with the show.
No.
I would say, personally, my biggest problem with this show is that it has way too many uncomfortable overlaps with AI.
Oh, yeah.
To say that.
Partially because, of course, that other remake was just on. I mean, I started thinking it's AI meets Rosemary's Baby. With a lot of leftover production design from Defying Gravity, which just reminds me of why I wish Defying Gravity was still around.
Really? Because I was expecting Kennex and Dorian to come out of nowhere, and it's the same basic idea, right? This near future kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't say that it's bad. What bothers me a little bit is that the material doesn't seem to match the immense amount of promotion and weight and gravitas that they are trying to invoke
mm-hmm.
on this whole, like, extant. It's like, what? Just, this is the kind of crap that Heroes used to pull that made it seem overly pretentious. And this show is pulling exactly the same kind of thing. And I'm not sure what to even think about it. But it's like, okay, so you've got extinct and then you've got extant, I'm struggling to even remember what that word means. So I'm going to look it up, and it just means, first of all, they're mispronouncing it from what I can tell. And then you've got, in existence, still existing, not destroyed or lost.
Right.
What does that have anything to do with what we saw?
Some sort of holdover, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right? So, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Clear, which is why I feel like this has a little bit of pilotitis going on. They focus so much on this kid, which drove me nuts. Because I was actually hoping before long that the kid would start going bad and start killing people.
actual people as opposed to birds. Yes.
But it's like, what is the point? I didn't really get there.
Yeah, there was also just some weird dissonances in terms of there's the whole sort of paranoid thriller aspect with the guy who's supposed to be dead turning up and saying don't trust anybody, and her private therapy sessions that all the bosses are listening in on. And then, I mean, and I said, oh, this is all going to come out as part of the conspiracy, the whole thing, the fact that, yes, she was up there alone and she's pregnant. And, but that apparently they've got really strong HIPAA laws in the near future. So, and nobody can find out about that unless, of course, as I say, it's just oh yes, they really do know all about it, and it's all part of whatever scheme is going on. But yeah, it's if you're going to do paranoid thriller, why throw in all of the angsty family? We couldn't have children, so we made a robot boy, and he's may turn out to be bad Pinocchio. But yeah, I do get that sense of it. It's not really quite sure of what it wants to be.
Well, and it doesn't help that the mysterious benefactor scientist guy is the same dude that played the mysterious scientist guy on Helix.
Of course, yes.
And so the entire time I'm sitting there thinking, damn it, it's the second season of Helix. They tricked us. They moved it. Damn you. But no, I don't know. It's just, it's very strange start. I'm going to continue to give it a chance, but
yeah.
It's going to have to do a little bit more work in order to get my full attention.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But it's going to have to do it pretty quick, because some of the shows that I've been looking forward to returning this summer will be popping up in the next couple of weeks. So it's going to have lots of competition.
Indeed.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.